welcome to Shop Talk number 5 from that's my big problem on the microphone, is my hanging the voice there and a lot of and stumbling over myself. Welcome to the Outrider podcast. This is Shop Talk number 5 with my friend Laura Holly and me, of course, Jason Quinn Malott. We have an interesting episode today, if you can get past my perpetual use of and long pauses on this particular one. I was trying to listen to that as I was cleaning it up because we had some technical difficulties, some big ones. My iTunes seemed to turn on in the middle of it and cut off my Skype connection with Laura, and I babble for a little bit. So I cleaned that up a little bit. You'll get past that quickly. But we talk about all sorts of things today. Everything from dating, Dr. Seuss, going back to school yet again, the ubiquitous nature of the song Church by Hozier or whatever their name is. I don't know. The song's not bad. It's not bad. I could have liked it at some point, but the radio station here. Anyway, I talk about it. Let's get right to the conversation with Laura Holly for Shop Talk number 5.
Hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Whoops. My calendar started talking to me all of a sudden. All I heard was that. What did you say?
Oh, I said good. How are you?
I've been looking forward to this since the last time we talked.
Yeah? Good.
This is my, I mean, I have the salons every month.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of interesting stuff gets discussed, and everybody's working on great stuff. You know, there's something I think I find particularly unique about getting to talk to you on a regular basis again that just thrills me.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
So, how is it? How have you been since the last time we talked?
Oh, fine. Just fine. Yeah. Regretting going back to school again.
What?
I have no time for anything. I'm annoyed.
So what are you going to go back to school for now?
I'm getting my BSN, which is a bachelor's in science and nursing, because I have more mobility that way.
Right.
It's online school, and it's short, accelerated, but it's driving me crazy because of the busy work, the redundancy, and the ridiculousness of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I'm past that. I've done that so many times. I'm like a professional student, and it's really driving me nuts. I'm kind of the joke of my family, so, like, whatever.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean,
it's pretty stupid, to be honest, but that's okay.
I would not call it stupid. I would call it restlessness. Is what I would call it.
Yeah. I just,
why are you restless, Laura Holly?
I don't know. Probably because I'm not writing. It always comes back to that.
Could be. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But how are you?
And of course, the solution to not writing is to go back to school so that you have less time to write.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm doing okay. I've got a few things that have kind of livened up a little bit. I got in touch with a friend of mine, a business acquaintance, I guess you could say. But friend. Uh-huh. I might as well just call her a friend. Caitlin, who is who's a book publicist.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, I'm running out of writers I know to talk to on the podcast, so I've asked her to introduce me to some writers.
Oh, very cool.
That I could maybe talk to on the show. So we're working together to kind of get some people on there. And that'll come up later, because when we talk about the books we're getting ready to read.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, mostly what I've been doing is
is this stuff we'll eventually end up jabbering about.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Although I do wanna. I'm ready to give up again on trying to date. I think I'm done with that. That's just too much of a hassle. Whoops, still there? Hello? Hit the record button and... So, technical difficulties. I forgot where the hell we were. This is why we have an outline now.
Yes, well, we were talking about dating and you giving up on it.
Right. Okay, yeah, there was a little bit of a, I will admit, to a mental block about, I brought that up and then I thought, do I really want to talk about that?
Okay, we'll maybe it was
maybe my computer was actually looking out for me, but yeah, no,
I wasn't.
Oh, it's terrible. The online dating thing, it's awful. It's awful around here. I mean, it's not that I haven't, when I've gone out on dates, met someone nice. Mm-hmm. It's just,
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, seriously, when you stop looking is when, like, officially stop looking, you're not even just thinking about stopping looking, you just aren't, is when you will meet somebody.
Yeah, I've been told that before.
I know you've been told that, probably. It's kind of cliche, but it's really true.
And every time I hear it, it reminds me of high school.
Yeah.
When I would complain, you know, to my lady friends, nobody likes me. And
yeah,
well, when you get to college, they'll be all over you. They won't.
Oh, I know. And then you get to college, you're like, what the fuck?
Oh, when you get out in the real world, no, they aren't.
I know.
And when you stop looking, no one will find you.
What I ever heard about high school is that you'll never have to see these people again. I'm like, yes. And it was true. I didn't.
That was the only thing that was true. You know, high school, this is the best time of your life. No, it wasn't, and don't ever think of it that way. Oh, you know, all these people, No, the only thing about high school that came true was you'll never see these people again. And I know. And of course,
if you do see them again, they'll be fat and ugly.
You know, or the ones that you do see again, they're the ones that you actually do want to see again. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that tormented you tend to fade away.
Yeah. They are gone.
That's kind of what I'm up to these days. That's as far as the non-bookish writing things going. So you did. What were we both reading on at the same time? Was it Station 11?
Station 11. I'm still on Station 11.
Oh, really? How far?
I have not had any time. Read it in weeks.
Are you still about the same? Same spot, or are you a little
further? Yeah, I'm not much further. I have not had time. It's ridiculous.
I know. Sounds like it. Good grief, Laura.
I know. I'm getting kind of frustrated with the whole thing. But I don't know what to do about it. I need to finish this stupid BSN thing.
Yeah.
But at least have that, because, you know, if something happens, you know, people don't hire, the only people that hire ADNs, which is an associate degree, which is what I have in it,
right,
are psych hospitals. Which is fine because I'm working. But if something happened where I wanted to get a job in the hospital, which I don't ever see happening, but if it did, I'd need a BSN. And it would help to promote and stuff like that. So.
Right, right. They can get you out of wrestling kids to the ground and doing something else.
Yeah. Oh, God. We actually have a really good group of kids right now. And, you know, the closest I get to literature at this point is reading my 6-year-old patient a bedtime story. And this is the heartbreaking part, Jason, is that I have an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old there who are just begging me to make up a story, a bedtime story. And every time I put them off, I say, I'm not good at making up stories. That's what I tell them.
Liar.
I tell them, and I feel so bad. I'm like, I can't do it. I'm almost afraid to do it.
Yeah.
I said, I need some time to speak to one. And I'm like, it's a stupid kid story. You can't even do that. That's what it's gone down to. I can't even tell a bedtime story.
So, but you've read them bedtime stories. So you have.
Yes, I read a lot of Dr. Seuss.
A lot of Dr. Seuss. All right.
Yeah, which isn't bad. Dr. Seuss is pretty good. He should have made it onto that list I posted on Facebook about the 51 best literature lines in literature.
Yeah, yeah. The most beautiful.
Green Eggs and Ham.
I was disappointed that didn't contain any Michael Ondaatje.
Oh, I know. I was shocked too. However, they had some people I was really surprised they didn't have on there. Like I mentioned, Raymond Carver. That was pretty cool. And then my favorite book, like one of my top 10 books, is The Awakening.
Oh, yeah.
And they had something from Kate Chopin. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. They had some pretty good stuff in there. I was pretty impressed. But you're right, there was no Michael Ondaatje. And there should have been. But he's underrated.
Yeah.
And he used to write another book, too.
Catch Table's
not... I'm sure he is.
I'm sure he's wandering on around on something. So you haven't finished Station 11, so you're not...
No.
And so that's still your current reading book.
Yes.
I of course finished Never Home.
What'd you think?
It was really good.
Isn't it good?
Maybe we should put in a spoiler alert here for people that are listening and haven't read it, but you know.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe I'll, you know, a spoiler alert is all I can do is, you know, like fast forward 10 minutes, people, or maybe it might not, like, I'm going to go through and time this.
there you go.
You know, and say, stop listening at 4 minutes and whatever, and start listening again, whatever. I'm too lazy. If I had a producer, I would tell you, but here, spoiler alert. When she freaking kills her husband, man, I wanted to die.
I know. I was like, no.
Oh, my God.
I was doing the count in my head. I was doing the body count, and I was like, wait a minute. I was like, no, that's awful. She went through so much to get home.
Yeah.
Well, the thing, when I first read it, I had no idea that narrator was a woman.
What?
Until I was, when I first bought the book, I had no idea what it was about.
Right.
I knew nothing. I didn't know the narrator was a woman. I didn't know that, you know, she was a woman dressed up as a soldier, blah, blah. I didn't know any of that. So it's kind of cool to figure it out on my own.
Oh, yeah. So, that's right. You read it as an ebook, so you didn't have the jacket copy beforehand.
No, I had the ebook.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's kind of cool. So I had the experience of, it wasn't too far into it. I mean, he dropped some hints. You know, after maybe the second hint, I was like, oh, cool. Like,
right.
Like, she's a woman. I'm like, okay. You know, and I'm like, I couldn't wait to find out when he finally made it official, but.
Yeah, so you had a pre-technology experience of, you had a technologically based pre-technology experience of reading.
That's crazy. I did. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
There was nothing to spoil it. There was no accidental, you know, let me give you the preview and tell you the whole movie, you know?
That's funny.
Yeah. But I had no idea that that's what was going to happen. So it was kind of a nice little surprise.
What do you have on your stack for once you finally do get done with Station 11?
I don't know.
No, at all. Okay, I have some. I have. Calm down, Jason. Just calm down. I'm getting. I guess maybe I didn't have enough time to wind down after work. I'm a little.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's so early. Yeah.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I think what got me was, you know, I had to stop and run that errand, so I then had to deal with traffic more than normal.
Oh yeah.
Which drives me batty. Oh, goodness. The next book on my list. Oh, one of the other books I just finished recently was, and it's a good thing that that Scott Phillips and I were having a hard time getting a date scheduled for us to record an episode, because I was in the middle of reading his newest one, Hop Alley, and got distracted by other things, and it languished. And then, of course, Laird's book came up, and Emily's book came up.
Yeah,
and I went and read those. So I actually just finished the other day, Scott Phillips' new book, Hop Alley, which is kind of a weird prequel sequel thing to his book Cottonwood, which was his Western. And I'm not sure that you would like Scott Phillips, but maybe.
No.
Well, you did like The Ice Harvest, right? The movie?
The Ice Harvest or The Ice Storm?
Ice Harvest with Billy Bob Thornton and John Cusack.
Oh.
That was set in Wichita.
I have big memories of that.
I think we might have watched it.
I think I liked it. I used to like Billy Bob.
To go and watch it again or pick up the book.
That
one I think you might like. But he's there's a lot of sex in Scott Phillips' books and a debauchery. It's all about the thought process. He's very obsessed with the thought processes of the criminal mind or the semi-delinquent mind. Who knows?
That'd be interesting.
Maybe you would be interested.
I did read Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Which, have you seen it?
No. I mean, I've.
Have you heard about it?
Yes.
Because I saw one episode.
I'm not so much of a snob that I'm completely oblivious to pop culture. I mean.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you realize how much sex is in that.
No,
translated into the books. Oh, there is so. It is so raunchy and violent. It's like blood and semen the whole way. I mean, that's the thread that keeps the story alive, I guess.
Yeah.
So I could probably handle that.
Yeah, then give Scott Phillips a try.
Okay.
He's most, except for Cottonwood and Hop Alley, which are Westerns set in, you know, late 1800s you know.
That'd be cool.
Kind of Kansas-centric, except for a Hop Alley, which is set in Nebraska and Colorado, but follows the central character of Cottonwood. Most of his crime noir fiction is set in and around Wichita. So like The Ice Harvest, The Adjustment, I think The Walkaway was too. I don't know. I'd never picked that one up, and I need to. It's also going to be kind of hard to find Cottonwood because it's out of print.
Nook, there we go. We got the Nook.
but if you're interested, his one book that's not set in Kansas is called Rake, and that one's set in France about an actor. That one was a whole lot of fun. I think if you want to start with one, start with that one.
Okay.
And it just came out last year or early this year. But yeah. Hunt Down Rake. It's a lot of fun.
Sounds good.
So yeah, that's. But as far as what I have next on the list is I just started reading it. It's a novella and some stories by, and I might murder her last name. Bonnie Zobel.
Okay.
And it's called What Happened Here. And it's a novella and collection of short stories that's set in a neighborhood in San Diego that in 1978, I think, was the site of a horrible airline crash. There was a mid-air collision and this airliner crashed into this neighborhood. So it's, you know, that's kind of the background of this.
Okay.
So, and I just started that one. But then I've got a whole bunch of other stuff that I would like to get read, like You Animal Machine, Eleni Siklianos.
Mm.
And I have Woody Guthrie's novel that was just published a couple of years ago, The Folk Singer.
Okay.
Um,
His best known song was "This Land Is Your Land." You know, that we all learned in music class.
Yeah,
in grade school.
Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. You know, he's one of those Depression era American folk singers that was.
Oh, cool! Yeah. Right.
And he actually wrote a novel, but it didn't get published until just a couple of years ago. So I've got that on my shelf that I want to read.
That'd be fun.
And of course, you know, that Samuel Beckett novel, Molloy, and the David Markson novel, Wittgenstein's Mistress.
Yeah.
I should also probably go back and finish Christopher Jansma's The Unchangeable Spots of Leopards.
That's a cool title.
Yeah. Or I could go read Kyle Miner's Praying Drunk collection of short stories, which everybody says.
You have a lot to choose from.
Hmm?
You have a lot to choose from.
Yeah. Everyone says that one's really good.
Yeah.
But I'd also like to go back to the classics. I'd like to go and pick up Victor Hugo's The Man Who Laughs.
Tried getting through Les Miserables.
Yeah.
Because I love musical. And I think I got about halfway through. I tried reading it in high school. And I got about halfway through it. It's a big book.
Hmm. Yeah.
But I've never read any other Victor Hugo.
Yep. The Man Who Laughs is freaking giant.
Yeah.
And the reason I got interested in it was because someone turned it into a graphic novel for Heavy Metal Magazine, which I like to read. It's described as the incredible love story of the man whose face has been disfigured into a laughing mask, and the loyal blind girl who gives him her heart, and the cruelty of the privileged aristocracy whose laughingstock and savior he becomes.
That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. It's kind of that Beauty and the Beast thing, but
yeah, that's what it sounds like. That's what I did read some Victor Hugo with Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yep.
Sorry. Yep. Also made into a Disney movie. Anyway. But that sounds like a cool story.
Yeah. So have you seen any decent movies lately?
Not movies, but I'm really into a great TV show.
Which one?
American Horror.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, my God, I love it. I love the whole concept of it, which has got me thinking today about, like, how can you do that in, like, print?
Mm-hmm.
Where you have, because they have the same cast every season, but they do different storylines, so it's completely different. So you don't know what, you know, the characters come back, you know, who are they going to be this time, you know?
Right.
Like, the reporter from Asylum comes back this year as, you know, the conjoined twin. You know, the kid who in Coven was killed and turned into kind of a zombie comes back as Lobster Boy. You know, it's just pretty cool to see how these different actors are coming out and coming together as different characters.
Right.
And it's also creepy and pretty cool.
Yeah.
But
cool.
So I'm really into that.
Yeah, Rebecca was into one of the early seasons. She might still be watching it. I never got into it.
No.
Maybe I should go back. I mean, it's on Netflix, isn't it? I should be able to pick up the early seasons.
Mm-hmm. There's three before the ones on now.
Yep. I might go back and check it out.
It's just kind of cool. It's like almost a complete novel for each. It's kind of, it reminds me a little bit of Dexter in a way, where each season was like a novel in itself.
Right.
Like one complete storyline. Like, you know, you'd have one villain or one main antagonist that would just wrap up the whole season.
Right.
And I like that. Those nice complete packages. I don't like cliffhangers and...
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. I mean, I think that's... I do find it interesting that it's not a weird continuing story.
you know, yeah. each season is just a continuation of the previous, that it's that they just take a different theme and a location and motif and just mm-hmm. go with it. Because, you know, I ended up, well, it gives me the option to abandon it if I don't like it, I think is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is nice. It's always nice to have that option.
Yeah. I haven't really caught any decent movies lately.
I feel like there hasn't been any.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was an article I was reading on, I think it might have been Slate, where they were talking about the disappearance of the mid-budget movie, the one made for mm-hmm. like between $10 and $60 million.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, when I sit there and I think about it, I go, yeah, those mid-budget movies made for grown-ups
yep. are gone. They're not out there anymore. Yeah, they're like, either teeny bopper movies or big blockbusters.
Right, comic book movies, which are fine. Yeah. I like the comic book movies. Yeah. But, you know, I think that's part of the reason why I would like to go see Birdman, that Michael Keaton movie.
That looked cool. Oh, thank because you for reminding me about that movie. Yeah, that looked really good.
Because it looks like it's one of those mid-budget, made-for-grown-up movies.
Yep.
Sweet, you know? I'd like to see that. But, you know, I'm sure.
I was just thinking about one of those the other day. I saw a plastic bag floating in the air. And I just really wanted to watch American Beauty.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, I think The English Patient fell into that category less than 60.
Yeah, so definitely.
You know.
But, yeah.
And.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is that I mentioned that to other writers that I come across who are fans of Ondaatje.
Uh-huh.
And they all fucking hate the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, we've talked about it a little bit, and I'm not sure why they hate the movie. Although I can understand it. I mean, the movie doesn't really follow the book.
No.
You know, there's they take great liberties with a lot of things.
They did.
But to me, the people that complain about it like that, and, you know, a couple of them I consider some, you know, friends like Colin Dickey, who doesn't like the movie, loves Ondaatje and loves the book. But not so much the movie. And for me, I understand the complaints against the movie. There's some of the nuances in that relationship between Kip and Hannah that get lost in the movie,
mm-hmm.
particularly having to do with race and culture and,
oh yeah, totally. But at 2 hours,
right. You get 2-3 hours on a movie and for a book that, you know, spans at least a decade.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
and it's as deep as a black hole. Right. Yeah.
So I don't. But for me, the kind of the thing that makes the it's a nice, but the tone to me, the tone was correct. The bits of the story were different, but the tone was correct. The tone was dead
on. Exactly.
And the other thing that kind of always, you know, made me want to forgive all of the transgression was that story that we heard from Ondaatje when we were in grad school, that he was going out to do a reading from The English Patient after the movie came out. And he thought, oh, I'll go and read that scene that takes place in the garden. And he mm-hmm. starts flipping through the book and realizes, I didn't write that one. That one was in the movie. Right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's like, okay, yeah, the movie is a different story than the novel, but when the director and the cast and everybody nails that movie tonally in such a way that even the author is going, I wrote that scene. No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm going, that's you good. Did a good job. Just sit back, enjoy it.
Yep.
Not everybody sees it that way, and that's fine.
That's true.
Yeah, the TV show I've been kind of addicted to and got hooked on just because I was looking for something to watch one day on Netflix and then like wasted 3 weeks getting caught up because I would only like watch two, three episodes, you know, when I had time. Because I'm not one of those marathon people. Oh God,
I am. I am. I couldn't do it. Try to stay away from it.
But Arrow.
Wasted weekends. Oh, Arrow. Okay.
Yeah, Arrow. I got hooked on that one. And of course I had to go in then because it's in the middle of season three right now and it's not on Netflix yet. So I bought it on iTunes.
What's that? That's on the CW, right?
Yep.
Yeah. They have another good one called Supernatural. That one's pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. Then I'm going to have to go and at least, I don't think I'm going to buy the season of The Flash, but I'm going to have to buy the crossover episode for The Flash where Arrow shows up in it.
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculous. You know, I don't, on one hand, economically, let me backtrack. Let me get my brain sorted out here. On one hand, I don't have a problem with the comic book movies because I like comic books. I like those characters, yeah. You know? But the amount of material available in the comic book format is massive. Massive. Where the hell do I pick up? Where do I get started?
Right? Yeah.
And so what it is that there are these characters that I knew and remember from my childhood, you know, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Batman, all these characters that I remember from my childhood, from when I was reading comic books. And now I can get them in little 2-hour doses every year. Fucking brilliant, right?
Yeah.
But it's just like the problem with self-publishing. It's great economically for one group, and it provides entertainment for another group, but it's wiping out that middle ground, right? And that's a tragedy. You know, those mid-budget movies, those small presses that that take a chance on random writers out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Who probably wouldn't be able to get an audience if they were trying to self-publish because they write weird, quirky, one-off stuff. And they don't write the kind of blockbuster stuff that the big five publishers are looking for. You know?
Yeah.
That's kind of what's getting lost here is the really the richness of the whole artist form way of artistic expression. And that's the problem I have. I can't stop, you know, taking the drug and the drug's killing me.
Yeah.
You know?
I know what you mean. Yep.
So who have you been, have you listened to anybody new? Have you got any music that's kind of pushing you lately?
A couple songs, no particular, except maybe one group, but I love Imagine Dragons. I think everything they do is brilliant. The song, was it Hoser, Take Me to Church?
Is that Imagine Dragons?
No, it's Hoser.
Oh.
H-O-V-I-E-R.
I know what song you're talking about.
Yeah, well, I was talking about a coworker the other night. We're like, he's like, I'm trying to figure out what the hell this song is about.
That's about, it's hard sex
to understand.
It's about sex.
Yeah. That's it. Have you seen the video?
No. Who plays videos anymore? I have to go to actually YouTube and
go
find
to YouTube.
Okay.
You go to YouTube. That's where I get most of my music. If I want most music, I go to YouTube.
Yeah.
Instantaneous.
I don't know how to feel about that song. It gets played on a heavy, heavy... Wichita finally, just this year, got, well, I say finally, they used to have an alternative, contemporary alternative radio station a couple of years ago called Fly 92.7 or something like that. And
the people that own the station decided to go from the alternative format to Spanish language format.
Oh, that's a big jump.
Really?
Yeah, small.
And so that left only thing that was in Wichita now were Spanish language stations playing Latin music, country and Western stations, Jesus stations, and classic rock stations. There was nothing in there that I was interested in listening to.
No.
And just this year, they finally got brought back a station playing alternative. And that song, what is the name of it again?
Take Me to Church.
Right, right. What is that? Take Me to Church. I'll worship like a dog at the temple of something, whatever, whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right, right, right. Yeah. That's on heavy, heavy rotation.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I hear it every time I get in the car, every day. I hear it when I get in the car to drive to work. I hear it in the car when I drive home from work. If I get in the car after work to go take a run an errand, I hear that bloody fucking song. And
so you don't like it?
I think if I heard it every once in a while, I wouldn't mind it.
Yeah.
I don't.
No, I feel yeah.
It's not an active hate for the song itself. The active hate has to do with the fact that quit making me listen to this song.
Yeah.
You know.
See, I don't hear it very often, so that's why I probably like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just. I mean. I was sitting in a restaurant with some friends a couple of weeks ago, and somebody had the, I don't know if it was the radio station or some other, like the restaurant's jukebox or whatever, but that song came up, and the whole conversation at the table was going on about something else, and I think they aren't listening to the radio station that I listen to, but that song popped up, and I go, I'm fucking sick of this song, and they all kind of looked at me like, did you just have a psychotic break? Do we need to go get the white coats, you know?
Yeah. Oh, how funny.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I lately have been completely obsessed with Greg Dulli, and that's the Afghan Whigs and the Twilight Singers.
Okay.
The Afghan Whigs wrote that song that I played for you a couple times when I started writing The Evolution of Shadows. What was the name of that song? I can't remember it off the top of my head. I listened to it 1,000 times. Literally 1,000 times.
That's a lot.
What was the name of that song? And if I open iTunes, we'll probably lose our connection again.
Yeah. No, it'll come to you after we hang up.
But no, he's, and I'm surprised that this alt station here in town isn't playing the new Afghan Whigs album that came out this year, their first studio album in 16 years. But yeah, there's a lot of sort of, weird, not weird, but this religious guilt and debauchery and sex and drugs and self-destruction and addiction in a lot of his songs, which, and murder and stuff. So that's all very, dark. And of course, the musical influences of him are all like Motown and gospel and real dirty rock and roll. So it's, there's blues in it. What would be a good other story or movie to, it it's like a darker, more twisted David Lynch movie.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's addicted to something, whether it's another person or it's a drug or sex or whatever. Yeah, I'm kind of hooked on that stuff right now.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, but I've, you know, flip open my Pandora and listen to a little bit of everything. A couple of other interesting bands I'm exploring, like this band called Cursive. But yeah, that's kind of the gist of my external media intake for projects. So you haven't had any time to even think about writing, let alone tinker with anything.
No, nothing.
Is the urge still popping up on you?
Hasn't for a few weeks now, but it's always back in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about burnout lately. Because I stumbled across this article trying to distract myself at work, you know, from all the pain. And they were talking about how, you know, what burnout really is that particularly when you are talking about somebody's, you know, dream job, it's not that the work is too heavy. It's not that there's too much work, that it's not really what you wanted to do. It's the burnout comes from putting tremendous amounts of pressure on yourself to perform at a high level all the time, because that's your dream job and you want to go, go, go. And burnout happens because you've overstressed yourself. You've put way too much pressure on yourself and have thus paralyzed yourself. That kind of fear of success thing.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And I've been thinking a lot about that lately. You know, in relation to my own stagnation, the constant project switching and you know, office rearranging.
Yeah.
You know, because I a couple weeks ago, you know, mostly because of the stuff that's going on in Ferguson and New York around the whole I Can't Breathe case, Garner, you know, the whole issue of race has jumped back into my forebrain, you know, very actively.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm back on working on the Tulsa book.
That makes sense.
Right. You know, I'm back on the Tulsa book, and what I'm afraid of is that you know, a couple weeks that interest will dissipate again, and I'll be wandering around going, well, should I work on the other book I've been working on? Should I work on The Poison Moon? Should I work on A Lost Thread? Should I work on something else? Should I just do some poetry? What about the screenplay? It's like, and you know, I've had people tell me, you just need to pick something and finish it, because it sounds like what you're doing is you've kind of gotten into this rut where you're out of the habit of finishing things, and so you've forgotten how to finish. I was like, maybe.
Yeah, but I don't see anyone just kind of putzing around either, you know.
Yeah,
because maybe you're not in a good place to finish something. I mean, maybe you do need to putz around for a little bit. So you don't want to force something.
Right, right.
Yeah. Like, I will work on this book.
Yeah, there's a little
bit. I will finish it. Because then it turns out like crap. Yeah.
Yeah. No. There's a little part of my brain that wonders if the reason that I've been having so much trouble this year with
getting any kind of response from agents or the few publishers I've sent the Palace of Winds to is because I was forcing it.
Yeah.
But it's like, really, was I? I mean, I slowly and steadily went through it, and it was a 3-year thing. It was... and I think that might be just a, and there are other times I turn around, I think, well, that might, the fear of that one feeling like it was forced might be because the whole point was, of that story was to write a traditional linear, you know, narrative that would fit into that whole Freytag's triangle way, you know, the rising action, the denouement, and the falling action. You know, bullshit. And, you know, because the whole point is to have this trilogy where the first book is traditional, the second book completely obliterates it, actually is, abuses the tropes of postmodernism, you know, disjointed narrative and whatever else I can throw in there. And then the third one is about a rebuilding process.
Yeah.
You know. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I should just pull the Palace of Winds back and wait until I've finished all three of them so that I have a clear idea of what I'm selling. But that seems almost ridiculous. Because it might take me 20 years.
Right.
To get all three of them written. Because of, you know, the subject matter they're dealing with and the whole structural, you know, thing I'm trying to do with it on the back end. That takes time. And then, of course, you have to wrestle with, you know, do I have the talent? Do I have the skill? Do I have the experience? Do I have the... have I accumulated enough examples? You know, when did I actually get Malloy and Wittgenstein's Mistress read?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I don't know. And, you know, as far as the Tulsa book goes, and then of course the Poison Moon one, which is the whole, you know, dead ex-girlfriend story.
Yeah.
Those I don't need to do a whole lot of research on or work. Maybe the reason that I have a drive to start them is because I like the story, and the reason they stall is because it feels like I'm doing the same thing I did with Shadows.
Ah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it seems to me a little ridiculous to both try to invent a new structure and explore other aspects of character and the human condition that I haven't quite gotten a grasp on every time I do a book.
Right.
You know. Let the structure, you know, take care of itself in a way is what I'm kind of wrestling with. And that's where that burnout, too much pressure to be, you know, original and whatever comes into play.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out how to just let go of it. So I've been pushing myself to read more than anything else and, you know, blah.
That's probably a good idea to keep reading, you know. Something might resonate, and you're like, "Oh, that's how to do it," or that, you know, it gives you a break from your own brain too.
Yeah, definitely need to take a break from my own brain. Definitely, I'm doing my Rain Man. Oh my,
yeah.
But I'm afraid if you stop, even just putzing around and jumping from project to project or whatever, to get out of the habit. Don't do that. You know?
Yeah.
And that's a big part of it, just the habit. That's what Bobby would tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. You're gonna make the contract, stick to the contract. Everything else will eventually stumble along.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I have my associates, since you're not working on anything right now, my associates from Unoya Solstice, we've finished reviewing the early issues of the project for a new mythology.
Uh-huh.
And picking our favorites, you know, to go in, because we've been talking about, I think I mentioned this last time, we've been talking about trying to see what it would take to do a small batch publishing run of something. Find out, you know, what the cost was, what kind of hurdles and technology, mm-hmm. and whatever would do it. Because, you know, if if we're going to, you know, argue about what's good and bad in literature in the literary community, then we should make an effort to contribute to it in as many ways as possible. So we're discussing a small press, and I'm dragging my heels because there's always this little fear in the back of my mind that everything I plan somehow just, you know, disintegrates.
Yeah.
Particularly if it involves other people. Might be why I'm never going to get married. It's a plan that involves at least one other person, and I can't get that right. I've got two other people trying to think about it doing a small press because, you know, every other endeavor. Anyway, but yeah, we're looking at that, and yeah, we've got assortments and multiple stories from just about everybody who published in the project for a new mythology, but yeah, every piece of yours is going in.
Really?
Oh yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I told you, you have fans.
I don't even remember what I put in there. Oh. I remember maybe something from White Dwarfs and...
Yeah, Smoke and Oils. What was it? Accidental Austria.
Oh yeah.
With the car accident thing.
I did submit that story to that Juno-esque, whatever the hell it's called.
To what?
That literary magazine called Juno-esque or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it got rejected. I haven't gotten one of those in a while. That's kind of cool. But anyway. Well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah. I mean, but like I said, we've selected our stuff. We're in the phase now where we're working on how to do the layout, to actually produce the format and the text. Looking at some options to do that, how we want to do that. So then we'll get into sequencing the stories and the poems and the essays and everything.
Cool.
So yeah, we've actually got quite a lot to choose from. Going back through those old issues, I surprised myself on two fronts. I surprised myself with the absolute lack of skill that I had as an editor, and probably still have. I mean, just as far as like line editing, and then, of course, my layout skills were horrible.
There's a reason I'm
not a book designer. You know, because I let some typos and things get through that probably shouldn't have, but I was doing it by myself. The thing that surprised me the most was the overall quality of everything that was in there, considering how much I struggled to get contributors.
Yeah.
That was what really kind of surprised me, was that it was like, there's some really interesting stuff in here. And I got some, you know, interesting writers who have, you know, a couple of them have gone on to have some pretty significant careers. And that's cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So I, you know, one of those little, who knows? Yeah, we'll see.
Well, that's like a good project.
Yeah.
I hope it works.
Be interesting just to see what kind of, because I don't know the breadth of the distribution that the print magazine actually got, or how many readers actually stumbled across the few online editions that we did.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be interesting, you know, just to see what kind of interest there would be if we did actually figure out how to produce a book.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, we've got one of the guys I had in there who was very early career was Paul Statonge. And he's got two books out now. His most recent one was Evil Knievel Days that did really well. And he's got another one. Colin Dickey.
Yeah.
Who just sold his third book.
Cool.
To one of the big publishers. Oh, and Steven, who's actually helping produce the anthology. He's a poet. He's an English teacher. And he's been, of lately, working with an artist who does a bunch of the Adventure Time cartoons on TV for, like, Adult Swim, I think, or the Cartoon Network.
Uh-huh.
Have you heard of Adventure Time?
No.
Very bizarre little animated piece. But he's got a bunch of side projects, and McClurg's been helping him, you know, with, like, writing the scripts or doing some artwork, and they've got this book that just came out in November called Ghoulinoids. And some other stuff that he's been, and I think I've talked, I hesitate to say too much about it because I don't know how much have already been talked about on the podcast and how much is still secret.
Okay.
But he's been working on, like, you know, cartoon scripts that might get picked up or may not get picked up. He's been working on comic books with these people.
It's cool. Like,
wild. Like, I was joking around, and one time I said, you know, that he's on the verge of getting ready to take over the universe. but yeah, he's got a lot of, so, and these are all people that, you know, ended up in the magazine. So that's, we'll see how much.
Yeah, that's
going on with it.
Way back when, look where they were.
Yeah.
Look what they've done. That's pretty cool.
So anything interesting happening? Because we've reached our almost reached our hour mark.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else.
Can't think.
I will hopefully next time have read something or written something.
You're right in the. Did Hanukkah just start or did I miss it?
Nope, not yet.
Not yet? Next week?
December 17th, I think.
Okay.
Yes, we have a tree. That's new. My first tree. We're calling it the religiously ambiguous tree.
Oh, yeah.
Or fondly, the Jumas tree. It's a white tree, and it has black and silver ornaments, and it's pretty cool. I rather like it.
Yeah.
First tree I ever got to decorate. I was like, oh, this is fun.
Oh, so the fiancé is a Gentile. That's right.
Yep. Yep. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, I was, you know, the whole My family doesn't have many holiday traditions left, you know, after divorce and death and dispersal. There's pretty much the only, you know, family tradition really that's kind of left is, you know, Christmas Eve hanging out at mom's house eating bad food.
Yeah, that's a good tradition.
And watching movies. Because, you know, Amber's usually in New York and doesn't come until some odd, weird time in between. Or if she is here, she's being antisocial with the family and catching up with friends.
And then, of course,
mom can't get me to go to the children's service at church, you know. No, you know, 2 years that I went, that mom talked me into, last time mom talked me into it, I was pretty hammered. We showed up at the church service and she's like, I'm not doing this again. I wasn't fall down obnoxious vomiting, you know, woo, drunk, but
drunk enough.
I was drunk enough that I couldn't stop laughing at things.
And
you know, when the Lutherans have, you know, are being Lutheran-y and very guilt-ridden, have their heads bowed in prayer, and the drunk, you know, atheist in the back row is going. That's not what, you know, you really want to be known for, particularly when you're a preacher's kid, you know, so.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Yeah. Well, you know, my mother has gotten more and more liberal the older she's gotten.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a result of just her fiery, opinionated, weirdo children. When people at the church she used to attend to really started doing, you know, just really bizarre, you know, far right, you know, anti everything, you know, interpretation of religion, my mother's going, why are you against birth control?
Yeah,
you know, even when my mother was a registered Republican back in the 80s and early 90s, she was in favor of birth control. She was, family planning was a good thing, and you know, it's like all of a sudden it's like, and she was like, I'm not, shut up, which is kind of disappointing, but I mean for her. You know, the institution that she grew up in that was, you know, that was kind of that support foundation for her as a person, as a decent human being, has kind of fallen away from her.
Yeah.
I feel bad about that. There are times when I sit there and a little bit of my own little guilt comes back and goes, this is my fault. You know? I didn't have to rant and rave in front of my mother about how much I dislike God, did I? I mean, that wasn't necessary. Oh, well.
Yeah.
So aside from the ambiguous tree, what kind of plans do you have coming up for the holiday?
After Christmas, I'm heading to Amarillo.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. To go visit his family.
Uh-huh.
So that'll be fun.
Texas, huh?
Yep.
Don't get shot.
I shouldn't. I hope. I haven't been on a plane in, or even out of the state, really, in 6-7 years.
Yeah, since you got back from Missouri, right?
Oh, yeah, Missouri. I forgot about Missouri. I like to forget about Missouri. I'm thinking vacation-wise.
It's easy to forget about Missouri, believe me.
It's so easy. That's a horrible place. The Missouri experiment.
Oh, well.
Yeah, we hated it. But yeah, besides Missouri, I think it was Arizona. It was my grandmother's 80th birthday.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And she's 80. She'll be 87 in May.
Okay. Cool.
So, it'll be interesting. Are you doing anything at all, or just hanging out at your mom's, eating bad food?
Probably just going to hang out at mom's and eating bad food. I think there are some friends of mine that are in town by themselves. I might find out who they are and invite them down.
Yeah.
You know? Because
well, that'd be cool.
Suck to have to, you know, unless you really want to be alone. You know, whenever
yeah, else is some people do, but
if it, some people do. But if they don't, I would think I should invite them down to watch movies and eat bad food. And I thought for a while that I would just have them come over here, including my mother, because I have the high definition TV with Netflix.
Oh yeah,
right. And my mother still has giant tube TVs from the 90s.
Oh, really?
And if I want to watch Netflix down there, I have to take my Xbox because it's the only one that has, you know, the three cable RGB connectors.
Mm-hmm.
Can't take the Apple TV because that's only high def HDMI connector. Won't connect to any of my mother's TVs. But then again, if I have it up here, then all the Christmas decorations that my mother put up will go to waste.
Yeah, that's true.
So, we're going to have to do it at mom's, and I'm going to have to take the Xbox.
Yeah. That'll still be fun.
I have too many gadgets. Well, I think we...
Yeah, hopefully, like I said, next time I'll have read something or written something or done something interesting.
How long do you have to get finished with the program?
I should be done in August.
A year from now?
No, 9 months.
So. It's a year from now.
Yeah, basically.
We can argue about 3 months, but
yeah,
3 months. All right. Well, no, you should definitely get Station 11 finished.
Yeah.
Oh, you're gonna like it so much. I promise.
What's that?
I said I promise you will like it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. So are we good? Did we do well?
We did good.
You think we bored everybody that was listening?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Actually, yeah. If they're really so bored about it, they can send us an email. They can go to my website and send an email and tell us that they're bored. If not,
exactly,
we'll keep doing it.
Yeah. Sounds like a plan. Right.
Well, thanks for talking to me.
Of course.
And we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
All right. That was episode 5 or Shop Talk number 5 with me and Laura Holly. Thanks for listening. If you happen to know of a good coach, at least in the Wichita area, for teaching people how to talk on the microphone more effectively, send them my way. I could probably use it. I could also use some more instruction on, you know, audio stuff. Come on, I've been at it for a year. I've been learning by doing. I should be learning more. Yay! Come back in a couple of weeks. We'll be talking to Fred Ramey, publisher and editor at Unbridled Books, and of Scott Phillips, author of Hop Alley and a bunch of other stuff. So, yay!